So when I look at a company, I see a little bit like the employees as the soul of the company, and then the customers is basically like the heart and the lungs. And when you look at a SaaS business, I would say like Unium is basically the heart and the lungs. We are the one source of truth when it comes to everything that evolves around your customer subscriptions. So basically what we do is we automate billing and also more advanced revenue recognition and also the reporting of all the SaaS metrics and KPIs. We basically sit in the middle of the ecosystem between a CRM system and an ERP or financial system.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company's purchasing with magical features, but that is not why we are here today. Instead, I'm bringing you along on a bit of a journey. We are a SaaS business, which means that we charge our customers on a monthly or annual basis, and we have a lot of subscriptions to manage. Now, as part of this, I have an embarrassing story to share first up, which is about 4 weeks ago, we discovered that we had a customer, actually our first ever customer, who we hadn't billed in 3 years, and they were still using the software. Well, we got the money back, but certainly it was a little bit embarrassing to have people using the software when we hadn't been charging them, but also they hadn't been included in our usual price reviews. It was basically a several thousand euro mistake. So to try and fix that problem, I have dived into the world of revenue recognition. And that's the lingo. And we're going to dive into what the lingo is here with my guest, who's Clara Ahigrin. Sorry, I know I butchered that, Clara, but I'll work on it. Clara works for a company called Unium. This one's going to be a bit more finance orientated, but from a layperson's perspective. So let's kick things off. Clara, you have many skills to your bow. Maybe you just tell us a little bit about you and your background. You're not just working on go-to-market with Unium, but you're also a podcaster. Tell us a bit about you.
Thank you for having me. I'm a bit like excited and scared at the same time joining a CFO podcast. But I can tell you one thing, James, you don't need to be embarrassed over that invoice that never been sent, because I meet with so many other SaaS businesses and they experience basically the same. Yeah, but I'm Clara, been with Unium for almost 3 years. Also, I usually say I have like two jobs. One is that I'm full-time single mom to my daughter Adele. She's 3.5, working at Unium. And as a little side hustle, I am 1 out of 10 co-hosts in the Revenue Circus podcast. And that is a commercial podcast. So we are basically 10 different co-hosts that work in pre-sales, sales, customer success. And we are sort of interviewing other individual contributors to help other individual contributors excel in their career, basically.
So that's interesting. Just before we move on from that, so Revenue Circus sounds like it might be relevant to this audience also. So it's 10 collaborators, which sounds like a lot of people. So tell me about why is it 10 and who is it for? Who should tune into it?
So this is the founder, Dominic, behind this. He actually doing something called Artist Circus, which is like a big event for the commercial side. So basically like a Tomorrowland for sales. I was actually there last Friday. I think I told you that when we had a pre-chat. But I think like in this perspective, like there are so many podcasts out there that are more focused on, you know, the C-level. And Dominic wanted to create something for the ones that are more out on the floor talking to potential customers. So I think like this is something to help other sellers or customer success managers excel in their career. So we bring up various topics. I did one the other week about imposter syndrome in sales, for example.
So if you're in RevOps or sales or whatever you're calling it these days, you'd be tuned into that one. Let's start off with Unium. What is it? What does it try to do at a high level, and who's an ideal customer for it?
So when I look at a company, I see a little bit like the employees as the soul of the company, and then the customers is basically like the heart and the lungs. Make it everything go around. And when you look at a SaaS business, I would say like Unium is basically the heart and the lungs. We are the one source of truth when it comes to everything that evolves around your customer subscriptions. So basically what we do is we automate billing, and also more advanced revenue recognition, and also the reporting of all the SaaS metrics and KPIs. We basically sit in the middle of the ecosystem between a CRM system and an ERP or financial system. So what we often do is that we are moving away the spreadsheet mania that many companies have with Unium. So you have like the streamlined quote to cash process.
Sales and marketing, they're almost synonymous at this stage. There's loads of tools for bringing those two together, the CRM being the single point, I guess. And actually, when I started to look at this, it's kind of shocking. The other thing that happens is after you have a sale, you think, well, the integration with finance is super important. Actually getting that money in is super important. And there's kind of an overlooked area. And we can talk a little bit about how we were overlooking that. But let's just start with the basics. So can you give us maybe a bit of a definition for what revenue recognition is for SaaS? Because that's the piece I'm most interested in at the moment. So what does revenue recognition mean?
So it basically means, if I keep it short and sweet, when you as a company can record a sale as revenue to the income statement. And I mean, this is quite easy if you have a one-time sale. You send the invoice, you recognize the revenue, but within B2B SaaS, it's different, right? Because you have to deliver a service. So if we take a typical example, so you are selling a 12-month contract, but you want the customer to pay annually in advance. You still have to spread out the revenue recognition for the 12 months as you are going to deliver a service. And you also have other costs, right, that you want to align with this. What is and what I see a lot when I talk to potential buyers is that most finance systems cannot really handle this non-linear process. So for instance, if you want to sell something and you start a subscription like in the middle of the month, like 7th of April or, you know, then you want to do a proration, which means that you want to spread out the revenue over those X amount of days in the month and the rest of the year. And this is like a lot of financial systems cannot even handle this. So that also leads you to start doing this in spreadsheets. And if we take another example, you have multiple line items of products and you have different revenue recognition rules. And midterm, you might reduce some users and you need to do a credit. Like, then you're lost in a financial system. So many start out in a spreadsheet instead and try to sort of handle this.
Let me describe a little bit how this problem showed up for us. So what we were doing was we have our accounting system, which in our case is Xero. Credit card transactions would hit Stripe in our case, and it would go through to Xero, and that was fairly straightforward. And basically the bookkeeper on their end was saying, okay, I see a charge coming in, so I'm going to assume that charge is from that date plus 30 days, you know, if it was a monthly subscription or 365, if it was an annual subscription. And even how they interpreted that was a bit of a guess. So anything under, in our case, a couple hundred dollars would be a monthly, and anything over that, you know, a couple of thousand would be an annual. And that's kind of just what our accountancy team, aka Billy, was intuiting by just eyeballing it. But what was happening and we noticed was that there's a lot of fluctuations between what we saw in our tooling like ProfitWell, where we see our MRR figure. And then when we looked at the subscription revenue on our P&L, there was variances there. Like it was fluttering around the place. It could be 10 grand up or down. And when we looked into it further, we realized things like, say, a customer that was charged at the end of the month was due to be charged at the end of the month, their credit card fails for whatever reason, and then it retries only a few days later. And suddenly, because Billy's just basically eyeballing the charge and basically doing cash accounting, and when it comes to when the service was actually delivered, so we double up on the value in 1 month and you'd miss it out in the other month. And it meant we had these fluctuations from month to month, which was frustrating, not super important. But the biggest thing was then you mentioned here the interface between the sales team and, you know, the finance team, which was that for annual contracts, oftentimes salespeople, not blaming you for this, but they do all sorts of weird and wonderful deals to get the deal across the line. So they were delaying the first payment by 90 days. They were allowing an extra free time. They were, you know, they were saying all sorts of payment terms like, okay, we'll charge you three times on three charges for the next 3 months, and that will take into account for a year. And what was totally absent, as you pointed out, in Xero, like there's no way in Xero of putting in what subscription beginning and end dates exist for a particular client. And that's how it showed up for us. So I guess the pain point for us first was the fluctuations, because it was just annoying and seemed inaccurate. And then when we looked into it deeper, we realized that, okay, there's our ARR and then our contracted annual value, our ARR. And to be honest, I don't even know what that last word really means. So maybe I'll ask you now, what's the difference between ARR and contracted ARR?
I think like a lot of SaaS businesses want to measure the gap in between those. So if I, for instance, close, let's play with a thought, a big enterprise customer today, and I'm in sales, I'm like, yay, the contract is there. And what happens, especially if you have a best of breed solution in place, but you get a booking. So basically, that's the contracted value from the day you sign with the customer. And in B2B SaaS, the contract might start within 2 or 3 months because you have a big implementation you want to start up with first. So you will actually see if you have those 2 months free of charge, for instance, you will not see the actual MRR, the actual revenue from 2 months ahead, right? And let's say that I did the initial discount as well on this deal because they want to ramp up the first year. That will also be visible on the MRR. But the CMRR is looking more into the future. What will happen after those initial discounts? So that actually excludes those initial discounts from the contract. So that's basically the difference. So the CMRR is more like, okay, but you want to have an outlook for the future. And I think like a lot of companies that I meet are measuring that also. If they are looking for the next funding round, that they want to show something that is looking ahead for potential investors, for instance.
Okay, that's interesting. So the first thing to point out, I guess, is that ARR isn't like a codified thing. It's not that well codified. Everyone kind of makes up their version of it. And it's nothing really to do with the financials. It's just to do with the subscription. And it's a point in time. So at any point in time, you have an ARR. Someone asked me, what's your ARR? It's like today different to tomorrow. And what I heard there, what you're saying is contracted annual recurring revenue. So this is, let's say you offer a 20% discount in the first year. That won't be there after that, you know, second year. And then maybe let's say we have a annual price increase, like sometimes we do, then you can also put that in. And then where that becomes important is where you're doing your cash flow projections and you're doing your planning and also you're doing your fundraising and maybe even your valuation. So let's say, you know, when you're forward-looking, projecting your revenue, it could make a huge difference to your valuation if you're going through an exit event, for example. All right, you got me clear. I'm learning here, Clara.
Yeah, because I was a bit worried. I felt we discussed this a little bit before and I was like, I don't think it landed.
Well, sometimes I think I know these things and then 4 seconds later, it's gone again, you know?
I do think like a lot of companies that are working in spreadsheets often mix those up. And it can also be a simple thing as, you know, sales haven't gone to finance with the agreement, you know, and then you mix up the dates. An easy thing, right?
Another big thing is upgrades and downgrades. You mentioned them. That's where it gets super complicated. And I can see that now we have straight away in our system, we did an audit there last week. People have been upgrading, downgrading all over the place. Basically, it's just the accounting team is trying to guess what's happening by the amount that was charged, you know, either by EFT or credit card. Our software is a SaaS business also. And, you know, it's got code. It's all code that we've written. And we have a billing module within that. And the missing connection that we have is that when, let's say, someone's success adds an extra user in the software, that needs to update that account to say, okay, they've got 10 users from now to the end of the year. And now from now on, they've got an extra 5 users. And then next year, we're going to build them for 15 users going forward like that.
Yeah, that's definitely something a lot of our customers are doing, and they are connecting their own SaaS service to Union through the API. So when you have up and down sales, you get that into the system automatically. So it's ready for billing.
So then you mentioned salespeople signed the contract. And of course, salespeople love commissions and figuring it out that and trying to figure out what the right commission checks are. You know, you have all sorts of instances where sometimes there's clawbacks. In our case, for example, you sell a customer, but they churn up before 3 months or whatever. And keeping all that straight, again, the sales manager kind of has his spreadsheet and his idea of what the commissions are. And then he just tells accounts, hey, pay Clara, whatever, 10 grand. Is there anything that these types of software can help in managing that process as well? Or is that a separate thing?
I would say like that is a separate thing, but you can sort of go into the system and you can tag the seller on the specific order or subscription. So you can pull out like reports if you want to look at the commission side.
There's specialized sort of commission software out there for that, which goes deeper because that get crazy complicated as well.
We're more focused on like the more advanced subscription in general and handling everything around that, I would say.
For high touch deals, let's talk about, so I was talking about subscription deals, largely credit card deals. And then for deals that are, let's say, you know, there might be a manual step, there might be paying by EFT, you know, we're using Stripe for processing some payments, and then suddenly we've got a manual, we've got an Irish bank, we have to kind of literally eyeball to see if things come in. How does this software help to manage that? Because it's okay, if you're putting everything through Stripe, it's fairly straightforward. But once you start to have more than one payment processor, it gets a bit more hairy in my experience.
So you are meaning like if you close a deal, it can be various ways for the customer to actually pay.
Yeah. So like, yeah, in our case, so the salespeople would say, hey, I'm going to sell, you know, I'm thinking of a customer that's coming on board in a moment. You know, they're going to be on a 3-year deal where it should be expecting a payment of whatever it is, 50 grand to hit the bank account. And then when that does, we know, okay, that 50 grand is going to pay for 3 years at 40 users, et cetera. And having that documented in the one place is what we are missing. So the salespeople have, they kind of know what they were thinking at the moment. Luckily, they typed it down or wrote it down at some stage. And then that 50 grand comes in and, you know, the sales manager then will go, okay, well, that's a 10 grand commission or whatever it is. But then the accountancy team really are not part of that conversation. They have no way of referencing like what happened on that side. They just see cash hitting the bank account. So does tools like Unium, and we'll talk about some alternatives later on, like do they help with the communication between those two groups?
Of course. And I can take Unium as an example. So we are, me as a seller, I'm using HubSpot. So when I have, you know, I'm coming to the quotation step in the sales process, and then I want to create a deal and a quote, then I actually get pushed into Unium's own quote module where we have defined the price book, the go-to-market price book. And then I define the quote exactly as I want. And that can be something that is super custom in terms of how we want to bill the customer. What kind of discounts do they want? So when I sign the deal with this prospect, what I do is that I activate an order draft and then ping Slack channel, finance gets, oh, this is ready for activation and billing. And then they go into Unium and just cross-check that everything is done correctly, whether it's Stripe or 12 months in advance or a milestone deal where like 30% will be invoiced now and the rest at a live stage. But then our CFO have that and then it's just ready to go for billing. So there's an easy step. And for me as a seller, like it's, you know,
and you as a seller, do you care about when the cash actually comes in? Or in your case, is it, no, I've signed the contract, that's all that's important to you?
I care when the cash comes in, of course. it's such an easy step for me to just like, okay, I've done my part. I have the agreement. Everything is exactly as we have agreed upon with the starting dates and everything. And then the CFO just needs to cross-check. And I can tell you this, like, having this system in place, this is actually my pitch. I shouldn't be too commercial in this podcast, but our CFO, we're a 6 million euro ARR company. He works 60% as a CFO.
He works, what, 60% as a finance director and 40% something else? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. He also backed in a VC company on the side that also invested in Unium. So that's like when you have that control, it's...
Right. Okay, well, let's just talk about some alternatives. I know, as a salesperson, this is hard to do, so I'm going to coach you through it gently. But like, obviously, we need the listeners to figure out, well, if you're looking at Unium, you know, what are the other universe of possible solutions to fixing the same problems?
On the market now, I think it's up to maybe 60 different subscription management or revenue infrastructure solution, whatever you want to call it these days. And when I meet our ICP, I would say that is B2B SaaS, where you have a ticket size or average revenue per account deal size is 500 euros and upwards. And you have a lot of custom deals, and that also requires more advanced revenue recognition. When we meet those like sweet spot companies.
So 500, that's just to clarify, that's MRR, is it?
Yeah, like you pay only 500 euros per month.
6 grand a year up.
And upwards, like in the ticket size. I would say then it's basically our sort of sweet spot. And I would say like when the company are around 2.5 million euro, 3 million euro ARR and upwards, then it's like time to invest in this kind of solution. So when we meet the right ICP, I would say on the short list, where we're competing, it's Maxio is one of them. They're also doing more advanced B2B. We're also meeting Sora, and Sora is a big American player that's been around for the longest. Actually, our CEO was implementing Sora back in the days before he founded Unium. Sora is doing basically everything. So they're both doing B2C, B2B, simple and advanced. But Sora, I would say, is more towards the enterprise segment. So when we are working more upmarket, we might meet them more. In some cases, when you have maybe sales-led growth motion with a higher ticket size and maybe some product-led growth, then sometimes ChargeBee also comes into place on the shortlist. Those ones are the ones I would say that I am battling against. And I would also say the spreadsheets, because that's also a competitor. Because that's... we have always done it this way. Why change now? So I think that's also a big competitor, I would say, in the space.
All right. So what I heard there was, you know, you're probably doing it in spreadsheets. And then the rule of 100, once you have more than 100 rows in a spreadsheet, starts to break down, especially when upgrades and downgrades start happening. Then if you're, what I heard is really good for Unium is about 2.5 million in ARR, between that and up, I guess. But would you say realistically, there's a sweet spot between 2.5 and 20 million? Is that where most of your... No one likes to limit themselves. Everyone likes to think, oh, I'll do that $1 billion client. But
no, but I think like that is basically where we are at the moment, I think. And I think it's a trend for many to go more upmarket. But it also depends a little bit, like what is your pain and business model as a company? Because you can meet a company that has very high velocity-driven sales with a lot of subscriptions, or you might have very, very high ARPA with the fewer ones, but very custom contracts. So it can hit, the pain can hit companies in different stages, I would say. So that's kind of a very like firm way to look at it. Like this is the ICP, check. But it's a little bit depending on the business model and subscription model.
It feels like that sweet spot, there's the plurality of SaaS businesses are around that couple of million in revenue. So it's where most of the market is in terms of numbers. All right. Well, I have a tradition here, which is to ask people a couple of questions at the end of the podcast. And the question is, who is your business hero? So I know you've been thinking about this a little bit. And so tell me, who's your business hero and why?
So I actually have two. I had to like go with one man and one woman, and one of them is Simon Sinek, and I know we discussed this a little bit prior to the podcast, but I actually have a reason why this matters to me with start with why. So, I mean, I've been in commercial roles since 2008, basically. And when you work in sales and you have your quota, it's kind of a tough job sometimes because you feel kind of defined by, you know, I have to deliver this. And it's more to that. But when I started out in sales, I was so determined to be top of the leaderboard. And if you only focus on that, you will not last long in the game. I think like having a more personal why I do this have been giving me more motivation in my day-to-day job, like more like a intrinsic goal, basically. So that's why I like him a lot.
We discussed as well, I, for some reason, rail against Simon Sinek, and I was trying to figure out why. First of all, he looks a bit like me, except a better-looking version, which I'm annoyed by. And the second is, I just realized my wife also really likes him. She's like, oh, yeah, he's so great. So now my wife is praising this guy who kind of looks like me, but better-looking, and then I think that's where he got my hackles. But the third reason is, he's got tough love for everyone, pretty much, like for employees, for Gen X, for Gen Z, whatever. For employers, like, he kind of manages to deliver an uncomfortable message for everyone. I love hate that suggestion. I don't know. He's obviously triggering something in me. I'm not sure what that is. So who's the second person?
Oh, but my second person, and this is April Dunford, second time I mentioned you in a podcast, if you're listening.
This is April Dunford, right?
Yes. I call her the queen of positioning. And I think, like, what she touched upon is so important, especially in the tech scene, like the positioning. You need to know how to position yourself. And that is also, like, from my commercial perspective, how are you going to help the buyer do the right choice? But I also like her in terms of, she has such a captivating presence. Like, when she walks out on stage, when she goes into a podcast, like, something I admire with her. That's my two business heroes from my perspective.
Yeah, we followed a lot of her positioning stuff. If you want to get started with this, just Google April Dunford Canvas, and she gives you quite a nice layout to how to think about your customer. And what I got from her stuff was, it gets you out of your own head and puts you into the buyer's problem they're trying to solve. And part of that is obviously what different solutions there are, which is part of the topic for this podcast as well, is like, think about, well, there's different ways to solve this problem. What are those different ways? And then help the customer understand why they should or should not choose you, right? So especially, I guess, in SaaS, where people churn. If it's not the right solution, they'll churn, and then that looks bad and you've invested a lot of time. Normally you're losing money on a customer.
I feel like when you're in sales, it's like you're the tip of the spear. I feel like I have a responsibility for the potential buyer and for the organization that I'm working in, because if I bring in the wrong type of customer, that will just have a lot of ripple effects. Implementation will do a lot of effort and they will not be happy, and then they will churn, and we just wasted both sides of a lot of time. So I think that's super important, actually, what she's touching on there.
Plus, doesn't it sound much more enjoyable to, you know, help the customers get their solution? That's kind of a cliche when it comes to salespeople, but there's another.
But I think, like, it's where we are going towards more and more. I think, like, you need to be kind of true there. Like, I have had some meetings where I can see it's not a good fit, and I'm kind of open and address that. And I think it's important to also tell the potential buyer, like, okay, we are doing this very well, but this is not our strong suit. And if this is the key thing, then you should go with this one. So I've actually redirected some companies to other vendors in the space that I think would be a better fit in some cases.
Sure, yeah, it's a lot more fun. There's a guy called Alex Hormozi. He's an influencer on YouTube, business influencer, and he has a great expression. He calls it commission breath, when a salesperson is just thinking about the commission check rather than the outcome for the customer. So,
but that's like the preconception. And of course, I mean, there can be pressure and yeah, you get that commission breath, but I think it will just bite you in the long run.
Okay, we'll wrap it up now. So Clara, how can people reach out to you if they want to find out more about Unium or revenue recognition or whatever? What's the best way to get in touch?
They can go into our website, unium.com. We have a chat function there. They can also go into my LinkedIn, Clara Ahlgren. You can actually book a meeting with me through my HubSpot link at LinkedIn as well.
Great. Well, I really enjoyed chatting with you today. I want to try and invite more vendors onto the platform who service the finance teams. Hopefully my wish is that it's useful to people who are looking for solutions, in that you can engage and find out more about a product without having to necessarily, you know, sign up for a webinar or whatever, or sign up for a trial. You're not ready and you just want to do your research first, which is good. And then hopefully it helps me build relationships with other software companies that sell into that finance team as well. So hopefully if we do it right, it's a win-win. And Clara, thank you very much for coming along.
Thank you so much for having me. I've had a blast.